the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Sorry, I keep forgetting Jalen Reed is on the end of our new open here. And I requested that, too. Sorry, Jalen. Let's do it. What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth C. Payne. Hello, Seth C. Payne.
Hello. Yes, it's a weird morning. I was trying to figure out how I feel this morning. I don't feel great about the Astros. The Astros lose Yordan Alvarez for at least 10 days with a sore hand, and yet he hasn't been doing much for the Astros anyway. So I don't know exactly how to feel. I'm still getting over the Rockets game 7, and I've got the Texans to look forward to in 4 months. So that's where I am. You ask how I'm doing, that's my 45-second answer.
Yeah, when the best news is like, wow, the Texans might be getting a new headquarters somewhere. Like, that's kind of where we are with the with the green arrow up, red arrow down type of stuff.
And possibly a new stadium. It's also it was a little bit confusing yesterday because various reports were coming out about, you know, Cal and Hannah McNair speaking about possibly moving their headquarters, which was the main conversation yesterday out at the Texans golf tournament, their charity golf tournament. But they did also mention that they're still in negotiations about the stadium itself.
Well, and at least I know at least one media member conflated the two in a report and said, "Yeah, they would they'd be open to moving their stadium out to the outskirts." Or I don't think
Hannah did say that they're still in negotiations or they're still in discussions. So
with the lease, but the moving out of Harris County was about the headquarters, not the stadium. I think
right. I think the headquarters moving out feels like an all but a near certainty,
or at least moving away from the part of town they're in now. You know, like not moving out to Katy or something like that. You know, like that's.
They said the Houston area.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, I always think of like there's I don't want to get too deep into this. Like we're splitting hairs. We're saying the same thing, I think.
Yeah.
But like there's them moving anything out to like Katy or whatever would be a big change. You know, that'd be
The headquarters, it wouldn't matter much at all. Yeah. I mean, how many people, do you make it a point of your day to go drive by and see if you can catch a glimpse of the players walking over the bridge to practice? So the headquarters would be kind of cool. Now, if they built some kind of a entertainment retail complex, it wouldn't be like the Star up in Dallas, but it might be a boon to some local economy if they were in Waller and had all the headquarters and everything else there, plus 100,000 square feet of retail.
Okay, how pissed would you be? Put yourself back in the shoes of being a player. How pissed would you be if your practice facility was all the way out in Waller and the stadium was where it is
I'd
right
love
now?
It.
You would?
I'd love it, yeah. Give me some room to breathe. Yeah, yeah. And then you just what? 8 to 9 times a year for regular season games, you're driving in on a Sunday. It feels like a special occasion.
There would be people who, you're a different breed, though. There would be guys who would be like, there ain't no nightlife out in Waller. That would be, I know they're not putting it in Waller, but that's just kind of funny to think of. Like, if it were that far, far away. Yeah.
I just bought 300 acres on spec in Waller.
Yeah.
Just hoping that might be, I can entice them into, I'm going to give them some tax breaks out there once I take over the local power structure.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So back to these Astros last night. It's funny. Yeah. Yordan is going to be out for at least the next 10 days, with this, the hand injury's back. We'd gone at least a year without the hand injury with Yordan Alvarez. But he's going to be out for at least 10 days. He's not been good this year. His OPS is below 700. It's the worst month he's had in nearly 3 seasons. And yet when they post that lineup graphic, before the game, like, hey, here's the Astros starting lineup, the mere absence of Yordan Alvarez's name in it does have some sort of effect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
yeah.
like, that he's missing in that lineup, A, makes it look completely toothless when Paredes is your cleanup hitter, Paredes is your three-hole guy, and Walker is your cleanup hitter. And that kind of bore itself out last night. They had eight singles and a double last night. There is something about even, you know, Yordan Alvarez, even when he's got an OPS of below 700, that his name being in the lineup has an effect. You know,
yeah.
like he is the one guy, A, he's the only left-handed hitter in the lineup, so that's something. They sent an all right-handed lineup out there last night against a right-handed hitter. So they've got nothing on the left side of the plate other than Caratini if they choose to if he chooses to switch hit. And so he's the one guy where you put in that lineup, you go, okay, when he's in the three hole, he impacts the two spots ahead of him and the two spots behind him. I think even when he's in a slump like he is right now.
And there's two things here. One, it's that Yordan's got a pretty lengthy history of kind of minor injuries or what have you that seem to either affect his performance or he ends up with time on the IL. The other is just flat out his performance. As you mentioned, it's one of his worst months, second worst month in his major league career since, let's see, he was in 2022, August of 2022, he had a 638 OPS in that month. April of this last month, he was a 670 OPS. And this is also in a stretch where you've got 17 consecutive games and you're down a relief pitcher, but you are up one Cesar Salazar. So that's who they bring up and replace.
Yeah, we got three catchers now. So that's yeah. a terrible trade-off. Yeah.
Astros with bases loaded. They've got the seventh most bases loaded opportunities in the league so far this year, and they have the worst batting average by a long shot.
Yeah, they got like four hits with the bases yeah. loaded this year. It's
terrible. They're hitting 114
yeah.
with bases loaded.
Yeah.
4 for 35 is what it is.
Yeah, this is just and yet they're 17-17. I felt like I had more fun watching last year's team 34 games in, and they were 12-22. Like they're not a fun watch. That's a team you can just throw on an extra computer screen and just sort of keep an eye on. There's nothing going on in any of these games.
Part of the problem is that obviously they have no offense, but as good as the pitching has been, they've also got the best whip in baseball, which means even the pitching, even when they're struggling a little bit, they're still not letting guys on base.
Right.
They're flat out, you let up some home runs here or there, you yeah. have a bad inning, and it's a boring game to watch.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And Blanco was what Blanco's become. He gives up three runs every time out, and you got to hope that this is one of the games that they score more than three runs. That would be 14 of the 34 games this year. They've yeah. scored more than three runs in a game.
He's got a 5-plus ERA at yeah. this point, and it doesn't feel – I wish I could just point to one game that has inflated that or something. You know, this early in the season, sometimes you could say, well, he had that one disastrous. Like, it's been pretty miserable pretty much every time.
This is what happens.
There.
We're seeing it to a more extreme degree and a much lesser important player for the Astros. But, like, Taylor Scott – guy yeah. is bumping around for a bunch of years. He's in his early 30s, and he has an outlier season where you're like, oh, okay, wow. All right, well, maybe we got something here. And it turns out, no, you had something for a year. I mean, Ronel Blanco, again, not too – well, I guess to kind of an extreme a degree, his ERA is around 5. But, you know, the last few starts, and I would say a majority of his starts this year, it's been like 5 innings, 3 runs, 6 innings, 3 runs. And, you know, like last night, if it were the Astros from even 3 years ago – that keeps you in the game. If it's the Astros of 2025, you're sunk, especially if Yordan Alvarez is out with a hand injury. So
yeah.
that's, you know, I start to look, yeah, the pitching's been great. Who are the guys you can trust right now? The pitching's been great, and yet Ronel Blanco's been fairly terrible. And Framber Valdez has not been himself yet, and yet the pitching statistically is among the best in baseball. So I, McCullers, we'll see how that kind of plays out over time here. Like, they're going to get Arrigetti back pretty soon. That'll help. But Blanco is more pitching his way. They're going to have a six-man rotation here for a while, so he'll be in the rotation. But as you start to look at the back end of the rotation and who you can trust, things yeah. like that, Blanco is slowly slipping out of the circle of trust for me.
It's been his most promising performance was 2 games ago against Toronto. He went 6 2/3 innings, only yeah. allowed 1 run.
He's their daddy. So,
and that's pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much it for him in terms of really yeah. impressive performances or things that you feel like, oh, that's classic Ronel Blanco.
Yeah. Here was Joe Espada last night on the Astros. Again, 3 or fewer runs in 20 out of 34 games. Batting 114 with the bases loaded. They had eight singles and a double last night. Here was Espada on what he saw offensively last night.
We got people on base. We got nine hits. We got that sixth inning. We had an opportunity there to capitalize, and we just gotta relax and let the game come to us. I think sometimes we tried hard, trying to get a big hit, trying to come through for our team. This offense is going to explode here pretty soon. We just gotta stay positive.
Okay,
it's gonna explode, Sean.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the names, man. Like, this is not, it's one thing to sit here and talk about an offense with Tucker and Bregman and some of the other guys. Like, and maybe it does. Like, I know Isak Paredes has had seasons where he's hit 30-plus home runs. I know Christian Walker recently has had multiple seasons where he's hit 30-plus home runs. I just don't have a history with these guys. That's the thing.
You don't have a history, and it's honestly, it's not an explosive offense. If just looking at the names, even the guys that you don't know, this is not what we've become accustomed to in Houston. I know it's been a couple years, but when you hear explosive, you think, oh, you mean they're going to be setting records for home runs and all of these other things? And it's just not quite. And you're going up against a pitcher last night who's walked more batters than anybody else in Major League Baseball, basically. And for all of the pitching judgment and what have you that you were supposed to have, did they have a single? They didn't. That can't be. Did they not walk once last night?
I don't know.
They didn't walk a single time last night.
Even the inning where they got the one run they got, it was like a seeing eye single, a throwing error by the pitcher. It's just you watch it, you go, okay, this is another one of these. They're going to score two runs, and Joe Espada is going to be real optimistic about it. But like, they're just they don't hit the ball hard. They did not walk last night. No.
Yeah, Myers had Myers came in there with like a 1.9 whip because he's just marching people around the bases. Yeah. The Astros, who focused on pitch selection and judgment at the plate, all of and mind you, but remember too, the Astros wanted to focus on their pitch selection. The two guys that have a pulse offensively, Altuve and Myers, are the two guys
free swingers, man.
Swing away at whatever the hell comes their way in the first pitch.
They're free swingers. That was fun. Myers' OPS was above 800 for a couple days after his 7 RBI outburst on Saturday, but it's back below 800. So everybody's below 800 again for the Astros.
He was as good as a normally slumping Yordan Alvarez. When Yordan slumps, he's like an 800 OPS. Typically, this is different.
Ailing Yordan Alvarez. You're exactly right. All right, we're off and running on a Tuesday. There's your Astros update. We'll get to them in headlines.
Happy
Tuesday. Hope you have a great day lined up for yourself. All right. Seth mentioned it. Still the aftermath of the Rockets' loss to the Golden State Warriors on Sunday night. Jalen Green has been the big topic. He was the big topic nationally with the Rockets yesterday. He was a big topic following the game. What are they saying? What is Jalen Green saying about himself? We didn't get to this yesterday. What is he saying about his performance? He got salty on himself after the game. We'll hear from Jalen Green, and the big day coming up for the Rockets is actually in about a week, and we'll explain coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I would say, like, individually, as I'm thinking about this playoff series the Rockets just lost, like, individually, Seth, you've been covering this Rockets team for a good long time, just like I have, since back in the early 2010s, late 2000 and nothings. This is probably the most discussed individual playoff series that, like, non-James Harden. Like, James Harden was the topic of every playoff series going back to the time he got here. Like, Jalen Green's performance in this series as an individual is probably the one that has been touched on the most in the 24 to 48 hours after the series, other than any James Harden series, in probably since before James Harden got here.
So I guess, it's hard because it's been so long since the Rockets were,
there was a playoff series that
didn't involve. It's almost like Jalen Green is the most discussed player after, other than James Harden, Jalen Green is the most discussed player after a playoff series than any time during the James Harden era.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of similar aspects to it in terms of, okay, is James Harden simply not a great playoff performer? He was at very least a viable and very productive in the early parts of series.
Yeah.
He just tended not to be all that great in elimination games and what have you versus the really good teams. So this is a first round series where a guy that you're hoping at one point is going to develop into the alpha star on your team is the guy who played most poorly, at least according to expectations or hopeful expectations.
Yeah.
100%. It's a lesser version of the James Harden discussion.
Well, and there was never any discussion, and we're going to talk about this now. Like, there was never any discussion after any of those series of moving on from James Harden. Do you trade him
right.
for so-and-so? Do you mix him into a deal? Like, this is kind of a different deal now with Jalen Green, because this is a team that probably needs to make a move, and it might involve moving Jalen Green out.
You know who might be in the running for that is Dwight Howard in the playoffs. Because, I mean, Dwight Howard, remember, would insist. Dwight always wanted to somehow prove Barkley and Shaq wrong. And remember, they would waste possessions in the first quarter getting Dwight Howard touches in the post to where he would ineffectively try to back people up and not score points.
Yep.
So there was that element of, okay, Dwight Howard in the playoffs, Can he ultimately actually do what you want? And it always felt like you were left wanting more.
Jalen Green took his performance pretty hard. This was Jalen Green with the media after Game 7 on Sunday night.
How would you assess your overall series? And, you know, is there anything that any of the guys said to you tonight?
Besides that one game. I got to be better. First playoffs isn't an excuse. I just gotta be better.
Or anything in particular?
Just being aggressive. Can't let a team take me out of the game. No matter what the scheme is. I gotta continue to go out there, be myself. And I just didn't do that.
I
desperately need somebody to get with Jalen Green.
Speak up.
Just get him to put some bass in his voice, man. It makes it that much worse.
Would that guy scare you if you were the Golden State Warriors?
I can't. It's all Draymond can do. All Draymond can do is talk. And also scare Shangoon.
The reason there was a 3-second long beep there is he dropped 3 S-bombs on himself.
Yeah.
Voice aside, like Jalen is taking this seriously and he's taking it pretty hard. But he was abjectly terrible in this series. They took him completely out of this series. Now, he does have a teammate taking up for him, and he's got his coach taking up for him. So, Seth, I'm going to play these, and you tell me if you see these.
Yeah.
I don't want to say making excuses, but just reasons or optimism or whatever it may be, if these are valid. This is Fred VanVleet on the struggles of Jalen Green in that playoff series.
It's different, right? But, I mean, I can share with him what I've seen and what I've been through. And, again, it's the weight of the world seems to be on his shoulders at times with everybody else's expectations. But, I mean, he played well. He played team basketball. It wasn't – we were a balanced group all year. It never really was about one guy all season. So we knew that they were going to load up on him. They did it. We played them 12 times, I think, this year. So they kind of played him the same way every game. But, again, as on the path to greatness, there's going to be stumbles and shortcomings and failures. And when you don't win a championship, it feels like failure. And you use that, you know, in your summertime as you prepare and get ready to come back a better player.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, where if he weren't a high draft pick and if he weren't making the money he does, you might, for one, they wouldn't be, you know, if he didn't have the talent he does, they wouldn't be loading up on him.
Yeah.
But there is that hump you got to get over when if you're genuinely an excellent NBA player, you still find ways to produce when they're loading up on you. That's the whole. I always get upset with this. I get annoyed with this when people try to make excuses for a pass rusher and say, "Well, he's getting double teamed a lot." Right. The really good defensive ends get double teamed all the time, and they find ways to produce. And he's just not there. So I don't. It's not like somebody yesterday accused me of being mad at Jalen Green. I'm not mad at Jalen Green. I'm just accepting him for what he is right now, which is he's not the alpha on this team, and he doesn't show any signs that he can actually be the alpha in the playoffs or he didn't hear, but that I'm open to if you bring in other people that can, you know, take the focus off of him, he can at least be a viable player in the playoffs. And I think it's very clear. He did that in game two. Game seven, the thing that was so frustrating was that Fred VanVleet was the focus of attention for the Warriors. It wasn't like Jalen Green didn't have opportunities to make something happen in that game. He just didn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't make it happen. Here's Ime Udoka on Jalen Green's struggles.
You know, you have to look at it as a sign of respect the way they went after him. Obviously, a leading scorer, and their objective was to take him out of the series. And like I've said throughout the series, it's he gets the ball out of his hands and gets us the numbers and the advantage. He's done his job there, and you have to try to take advantage of opportunities and transition when we get stops and get out and run and kind of be more efficient as far as that. But you know, when teams want to blitz you, like I said, I always say we should welcome that and kind of pick that apart. We've seen it quite a bit this year with him, and so he's improved in that area. But you know, he didn't get a ton of shots honestly throughout the series, or when they did guard him regularly, he obviously had a big night, and then they went right back to what they were doing. And so, you know, it's going to sting for him as well, not having his best performance in the series. But at the same time, like I said, you got to take advantage of those numbers. And he did his job to get off the ball, and everybody could have played better tonight, obviously.
Yeah, and what Ime is referring to there, that was, I think, more like game five, I think, was the game where they won, and you and I came in here the next day, and we were like, you know what, Jalen Green only scored 11 points, but he kind of did his job. He kind of, you know, he wasn't doing negative things. When he got doubled, he was getting the ball to open people, and he was facilitating things more. It wasn't that way in Game 7, nor throughout most of the series, if we're being honest. Here's the thing that I see, Seth, a lot with people, the people taking up for Jalen Green or making a case for hanging on to Jalen Green, trying to make a case that he's one of the untouchable young players like Amen Thompson, and maybe to a lot of people up in Shingun as well, is that they point to things like Kobe Bryant in 1997, where he shot four air balls against the Utah Jazz. Yeah. What I would point out was Kobe's rookie year for a guy coming out of high school. Jalen's 23 now, or 22, whatever. He's four seasons in. So that analogy doesn't hold a ton of water with me. And, you know, an 18-year-old kid, skinny kid out of Lower Merion, Pennsylvania still. He's a year removed from high school, and he's shooting air balls in the playoffs versus a guy who's been in the league 4 years. Here's the other thing. Like, I see people bring up Devin Booker. Like, Devin Booker scored a bunch of points on some bad Suns teams. Good thing they stuck with him, because now he's one of the best two guards in the league. Fair enough. The difference with teams like the Suns with Devin Booker, the Lakers with Kobe, like the Lakers were never moving on from Kobe. It's a straw man argument. The Rockets have options. Most teams that have young guys that are going through struggles early that get to the postseason, they are on teams where this is the only path to the rebuild is to marry your young lottery picks that you got, stick with them, and then hope that they play their way into being very good playoff players. The Rockets are the rare team, the rare contender, soon to be contender, I guess. Hard to call them a contender when they got knocked out in the first round, but I think everybody sees the makings of a contender on this team. They got a ton of options as to what they can do to improve this basketball team. And Jalen Green's just not a good enough player to stand in the way of that if he's part of facilitating that. There's very few teams that are making their run into the playoffs for the first time with a young nucleus that are doing so with five very attractive young assets on the team, a bunch of first-round picks. Hell, a lottery pick that's going to get lotterized next Monday and find out exactly where it is. Like, that's the other thing I teased into this segment. Next Monday is a huge day for what the offseason is going to look like for the Rockets. If their lottery pick that they have from Phoenix, which right now is scheduled to land at 9, if the lottery just plays out the way the math says it should, it'd be 9. But if it jumps up into the top 4, like it did last year, Brooklyn's pick did for them, hell, that's all of a sudden an asset where you might not have to mix Jalen Green into a trade. Yeah. Like, that's those 5 or 6 spots in a draft, in an NBA draft, are really important, especially if it lands at number 1. Then I think you hang on to it and draft Cooper Flagg and then figure out. Then all of a sudden there's a lot of guys who aren't as untouchable as we thought they were. But this is you can't compare this Rockets team and what they have available to them to go improve the team to all these other teams that have had two guards like Jalen Green that have struggled early in their postseason careers.
I think, you know, if you look at Jalen Green in Game 5, that might be more promising than the 38-point performance in Game 2 simply because, as you pointed out, he only scored 11 points, but remember, he knocked knees and got injured in that game, and that's also right. None of the starters played more than 2.5 quarters well, until the very end. So that was maybe the one that showed the guy that could handle how they were playing him. He became a facilitator. He made smart decisions. That was really good. So if you can build on that, perhaps there you have it. I mean, just by way of illustration, though, like people, you got to remember, this is maybe unfair because it's Steph Curry, but the finals where Iguodala won the MVP instead of Steph Curry, because remember, Steph Curry was limited in those finals. The lowest point totals he had in those six games was 19 points. He wasn't, It wasn't like Steph Curry. Yes, the Cavs really focused on Steph Curry and tried to limit him, and he never went off. Iguodala wins the MVP. Steph Curry was still scoring 20-plus in five of the six games in that season. It's just, you can't make excuses for a guy who's supposed to be an alpha by saying, well, they paid attention to him.
Well, and you know, like, if Steph's scoring 20, there's at least 3 points in the game that he's making a shot where you're like, oh crap. You know what I mean? Like, he's making, it's like, his 20 points, there's, by the nature of how he scores his points, there's always going to be at least two or three buckets in a game that just break your back for the next 2 minutes. You did everything right, and he's chunking up one from 30, and it comes at these really crucial times of the game. So you're absolutely right. Like, there's a difference between being contained and being completely shut down. And I think what you're describing with Steph Curry there, Seth, is, they were able to contain him. He still did some things. I mean, throughout the majority of the series, Jalen Green was a zero in this series.
Well, and the other big thing was that Steph Curry in those games was getting 7-8 assists, per game. And, Jalen Green, his high was six assists in game two. There were times where he had one assist in some of those games.
He's gotten better at it, but he's not a distributor, man. Like, he's a guy who's, looking to hunt first. So Jalen Green, that is going to be a major topic. Fred VanVleet, they've got to make decisions on Fred VanVleet and his contract within the next several days. So this is going to be a busy week for the Rockets, even out of the postseason with the lottery next Monday. This is going to be, if you're keeping an eye on the Rockets offseason, this is a big 5 or 6 days coming up. Text message: for a team near the competitive balance tax, the Astros have a team of guys that I look around and wonder, where's all the money going? Well, $30 million of it's going to Jose Abreu, so there's 30, and then they're still eating a big chunk of the Rafael Montero deal. Christian Javier's getting $12 million to rehab an injury. Like, there is $50 or $60 million on this payroll right now with the Astros that they are getting zero out of right now.
At least Lance's salary is actually counting towards actual baseball
that
for
is
the first
a
time
positive
in a long
thing
time.
Yes,
huzzah.
Text message: Jordan is a young 68 year old always a young 50, young 58 year old always hurt. Best days behind him. I don't think best days are behind him. I think this is just something that you have to deal with every year. I think that's probably these injuries are a big part of the reason probably why he went and signed that deal that looks so friendly when he's got 1,000 OPS. When he's got 1,000 OPS, that deal looks like the greatest deal in baseball. When he's got an inflamed hand and he's missing 3 weeks for an oblique, you go, okay, well, that's why he's only going to make $20 million a year for the next 3 or 4 years.
The other thing that makes everything miserable right now is that, yes, the Astros are one of the worst hitting teams in baseball in a lot of regards, but it's also in a year where offense is down in general in Major League Baseball, so it feels even worse. It's such a in comparison, there's still no excuse. You're still one of the worst but you're one of the worst hitting leagues in a year where the strike zone has shrunk and it feels bad. Really bad compared to what you're used to seeing on the base.
You're among the worst in a year where the league is really bad at what we're talking about as a whole, it's bad. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's do some headlines. We actually have a good headline for the Rockets that we'll get to. Well, could have been better, but it's all right. Astros, we'll get to that. Big news in the NFL, a release in the NFL of a future Hall of Famer possibly. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, here are your headlines. Let's start with the NBA. We talked about the Rockets and their offseason. Boy, a lot of people texting in their thoughts on Jalen Green, on the Rockets this offseason. We'll get to you guys, I promise. 713-572-4610 if you want to text. Ime Udoka finishes in third place for NBA Coach of the Year. Kenny Atkinson of the top-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers, who trail their series in the second round, 1-0 right now to Indiana. He wins the award. J.B. Bickerstaff, former interim head coach for the Houston Rockets. He was number two. The turnaround in Detroit got him to runner-up. And then Ime Udoka, 7 first-place votes. He finishes third in the running for NBA Coach of the Year. That'll probably be as close as any Rocket employee gets to an award this year. Good season. And Ime Udoka getting recognized as such. As far as the NBA playoffs go, upsets galore so far. So far, Seth, in all three of the second round series that have started, the only one that has yet to get underway is the one the Rockets would have been playing in if they had won in Game 7. Minnesota and Golden State get started tonight in Minnesota.
Ooh.
But the other three series, the underdog has taken a 1-0 lead on the road in those series. Indiana beat Cleveland on Sunday evening before the Rockets game. And then last night in the first games of the second round, the New York Knicks beat the Boston Celtics in Boston in overtime. And then the Denver Nuggets on an Aaron Gordon three-point shot late come back and beat OKC, and they're up 1-0. So if you remain into the NBA playoffs, the second round is off to a very intriguing start.
I'm fascinated to see what happens with Golden State with their many players they have who are 31 years old or older and on one day rest going to Minnesota. Exactly
straight
how
there.
That's going to look. Like, yeah. I mean, that's after a 7-game series and a hard-fought one at that. That'll be interesting. If we can go back to the NBA, the Coach of the Year voting a little bit.
Yeah.
The thing that jumped out at me immediately was the 5 third-place votes that J.J. Redick got. J.J. Redick finished 6th because he had 0 first-place votes, 0 second-place votes, but 5 third-place votes, which I'm guessing the Lakers writers might be the most homerish sports writers in all of it. Like, they bow down in abeyance to the L.A. Lakers and just love talking about their allure and their mystique and everything else like that. Those are 5 worthless, unethical punks that voted for J.J. Redick in the Los Angeles area. I'm convinced of it.
I thought in the regular season, I thought he actually did a decent job considering. Look, I know they won at least during the regular season, the thought was they won the Luka trade, and ultimately they probably did. But, he got him to the 3 seed. That's not an easy – it sounds weird to say, and there's going to be 25 other NBA teams that are like, oh, yeah, tough problem to have mixing 2 of the biggest stars in the league together. Not a totally easy – I don't think he did a bad job. I thought he was all right in the regular season. He was atrocious in the postseason. Like, when the head coaching started to really matter, he was terrible, playing his guys for an entire half without a sub.
That's true. Yeah. I got to forget the part. You have to forget that part of it because it's a regular season award.
Yeah.
Good job, J.J. Redick.
Yeah. You deserve you those 5 third-place votes.
Yes, you are indeed the smartest man in the room. I apologize.
Just like
how could I be so dumb?
That's right. The Astros lose last night to the Milwaukee Brewers. 5-1, the final score. The offense just anemic. 8 singles and a double in the game. And no Yordan Alvarez, and as bad as Yordan has been by anybody's standards, his OPS is in the 600s right now. Just not having him in the lineup is a little jarring. Joe Espada, still talking about quality at-bats and things like that. Joe Espada's never going to get negative on his team. He was asked after the game, is it more frustrating or encouraging that you're getting quality at-bats, but you're just a hit away?
Yeah, as long as the quality is there, I'm fine. Because I know that we're going to get some big hits. Our offense has not gotten hot yet, and we playing 500 baseball. Our pitching is doing a really good job. Our bullpen is doing a really phenomenal job keeping us in game. We just got to be patient and continue to move forward and continue to fight because we'll turn around. We'll get hot here soon.
Okay.
Yeah. The Brewers have allowed the second, in terms of pitch judgment, since you mentioned it and whatnot, the Brewers have allowed the second most walks in the league right now. And one of the huge culprits was Myers, the pitcher, last night. And the Astros didn't get a single walk against him.
No. And so,
the judgment at the plate, that's what's going to be the key this year. And aggressive base running, Sean.
Yeah.
That's going to bring everything home.
Some guys are back to swinging at the first pitch again. And guys who shouldn't be swinging at the first pitch. So the Astros lose. They're back at it again tonight. And if you hadn't heard, Yordan Alvarez officially goes to the 10-day IL, so he'll be out for at least 10 days. Out of nowhere yesterday, although you can see the reasons why, Justin Tucker released by the Baltimore Ravens yesterday. And I guess the foreshadowing for this, Seth, was the Ravens, who had never drafted a kicker in their 30-year history, drafted a kicker. Drafted a kicker in the sixth round of the NFL draft. Justin Tucker released by the Baltimore Ravens. They put out a very flowery statement about how much he's meant to the organization and how many, you know, how many great memories they have of Justin Tucker. I did not expect the statement to mention at all the shroud of controversy that he's under right now. I can't imagine another team signing Justin Tucker right now, considering the A, the ongoing investigation, and B, the fact that there probably were football reasons to at least look at bringing in another kicker with the Ravens. He was one of the worst kickers in football last year.
He was awful, and you wonder how much of Justin Tucker falling apart last year had to do with him probably realizing there was a swirling fiasco of controversy around him, and all these allegations against him. So the Ravens, who have demonstrated time and time again that they will not accept or allow stuff like this on a team if a player isn't good anymore. Zero tolerance if a player is no good anymore.
Right.
So Ray Rice, who was an aging and not nearly as good running back, or now Justin Tucker, who is the same way. But they did draft Mike Green, who faces two sexual assault allegations.
Yes,
in the
so it brought some back in the
allegations.
Building.
Yeah. Allegations.
Allegations.
Yes.
Allegations. Yeah. So Justin Tucker, I heard the show before ours on the network debating, like, there's, you know, I think it was Perloff saying, well, is this going to affect him getting into the Hall of Fame? This won't. I mean, the thing that affects him most getting into the Hall of Fame is kickers just take a long time to get put into the Hall of Fame. But as John McClain will point out anytime it gets brought up, it's about what they did on the field, not off the field.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of that is going to get, I know that that is the stated criteria by the Hall of Fame, is it is strictly for what is done on the field. Those rules are maybe somewhat archaic. I think as we get younger Hall of Fame selectors into the committee and whatnot, it may be the stated thing that the off-the-field stuff doesn't matter, but...
Yeah. Listen, that's what they say, yeah. And it's easy when they go untested with it, because they haven't... Listen, this is the crew that made Terrell Owens wait and wait and wait, just simply because he was annoying. It wasn't like Terrell Owens didn't have off-field issues or anything else like that, but they didn't like the cut of his jib.
Nope.
So they love to act like, well, we abide by the rules, and we would never allow somebody's off-field transgressions. All right, we'll see. I don't think, but that's the thing. I think because it's a kicker, it doesn't ever become a. It's easy to push off for various reasons. Yeah,
yeah. That's if he were the best receiver of his generation or something, you know, or if Deshaun Watson were actually a Hall of Fame caliber player, you know, that would put it to the
test. There's time, Sean.
Yeah.
There's time.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sick of you hating on Deshaun and counting him out just because he hasn't basically played football in 5 years.
Fair.
He hasn't played good football in 5 years.
We got answers. Speaking of the Texans, we got answers on a couple of things yesterday from D'Amico Ryans, including how will one of the primary guys they drafted a couple of weeks ago get used at least early on in his career. We got a Tank Dell update as well that we will get to. All of this from the Texans charity golf tournament yesterday. We've got that coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour next. Stay there.